Hello and welcome to the British Chamber of Commerce Singapore's podcast channel. With over 15,000 downloads since launch, we are excited to bring you Season 4 featuring in-depth content on business, global affairs and news across Singapore, ASEAN and the United Kingdom. We've had some extraordinary guests on our channel, including W Series driver Abby Eaton.
I've got thoughts for the future now. I'd love to try and kind of mentor some of the younger drivers, you know.
Renowned UK international education champion, Professor Sir Steve Smith.
Over about a four-year period, we kept increasing the resources going into mental health provision.
Chief Executive and Director of the London Design Museum, Tim Marlowe.
The way we design is actually thinking about the needs of everyone.
And CEO of the industry cluster group at JTC, Alvin Tan.
If you look at TDD, we are creating an ecosystem of companies, government agencies and industry associations in the digital space.
Thank you, as always, for your continued support, and I hope you enjoy this podcast. Welcome to the British Chamber of Commerce Singapore and another episode of In Conversation. My name is David Kelly and I'm the Executive Director here at the British Chamber. And this is the series where I sit down with some truly interesting and inspiring people to find out more about them, what they do and their organisation. Now, in today's connected world, the pursuit of knowledge knows no borders. Education has always been the cornerstone of societal progress, and its significance in building talent for businesses of the future is something that we take really seriously at the Chamber. So why is it one of our five core pillars? Well, education is the cornerstone of the next generation coming through. Yes, we support the current generation of those that are championing industry and that are in those jobs in terms of lifelong learning and development, but keeping an eye on how we can support the next generation coming through and connecting businesses with education is really important for us. Now, as we record this podcast today, the British Education in School Show in Asia, or BESSA, is going to be in Thailand on the 23rd of October and here in Singapore on the 28th of October, showcasing the very best of British education. The show helps families to navigate and meet schools in the UK and is coupled with some speaking slots from some key school heads as well. And my guest today, and I'm really thrilled to welcome him, is Kerry Jones, who's the head of the Caterham School in the UK. And Kerry's been teaching or involved in schools for 30 years and has been the headmaster of Caterham School since 2015 and will be coming to Singapore for BESSA. So, Kerry, a very, very warm welcome to you. Thanks so much for joining me today.
David, thanks so much for the invitation. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
No, it's really good. We're looking forward to seeing you when you're over here. What have you got planned during your visit?
Well, I've got a couple of friends I want to catch up with in Bangkok, which I'm looking forward to. Midway between Bangkok and our visit to Singapore, I'm going to drop into KL and catch up with some of our alumni. We've got an event in KL before coming on to Singapore, where again, I'm going to catch up with some old university friends, which will be great.
Oh, superb. A great connected world. Now, we've got a number of education providers within our network, both those that are here in Singapore, but also that are in the UK too. And Kerry, why is British education so important and why is it so highly regarded?
Great question, David. I think a few key reasons. I think the UK education system does a great job at sort of blending the best of tradition, you know, but also very much future focused. And yeah, that's something that here at Caterham, I think we've been very good at, along with lots of other great UK schools, that we provide a really firm foundation in terms of knowledge, you know, deep knowledge, which remains really important. You know, knowing your subject, knowing stuff well matters. And I think UK education does that with rigor. There's a real breadth to what we offer in UK education too, that the academic excellence and rigor doesn't come at the expense of the development of the character and broader skills. But I think also in the last few years, UK education is leading the way in terms of looking, I guess, over the horizon. And perhaps our conversation will move into this space in a bit. But you know, grades are one thing, and we're good at helping people get strong grades, you know, and progressing on to really strong universities, both here in the UK, but also all over the world. I mean, most UK schools now are feeding pupils into the US, to Canada, to Australia, all over the world, which is great. But also, I think we're now getting there's a much stronger tradition now of UK schools also preparing pupils for a world which is changing really quickly. You know, that whole piece around future skills, around, emotional self-regulation, around metacognition, around adaptability, around flexibility. They're also key parts of what UK schools now are doing explicitly in terms of their curricula. So I think we have that great balance between academic excellence, you know, tradition, great knowledge, fantastic launch pad for universities all over the world, but also now looking over the horizon, making sure our pupils are world ready genuinely. And I think that's why the kind of kite mark of UK education is still so strong. We do it all really well.
Superb. And it's just really interesting to hear sort of your take on creating sort of global citizens for the future. And you're speaking at the British Education in School Show in Asia in Singapore this year on AI and digital innovation in education. Yeah. Now, with technology changing the world so rapidly, I think we're all having to embrace lots of things around AI and ChatGPT, etc. And are traditional academic grades enough for future kids growing up as they move into the world beyond education?
And again, that's a question I think, David, that lots of us in schools are kind of thinking about hard at the moment. I think my own personal view is that grades still matter. I think grades are important because they open up doorways and pathways for pupils, right? It's still the case that if you want to go to a great university or move into a great career, having a good grade profile matters. But I think it is the case, as you kind of suggest, that that's not enough. I mean, we all know people where your success isn't just based upon their grade profile. It's based upon how they respond to challenge, how they respond when things go wrong, how they are able to network and collaborate and be innovative. And so like, schools increasingly are also focused on those so-called soft skills, making sure that, yes, we are helping pupils achieve incredible grades and great outcomes, but also that they are developing their kind of emotional self-regulation, to be able to manage themselves, to think about metacognition, to be able to work collaboratively, to be able to project manage, a whole range of things that schools now are teaching alongside your so-called traditional subjects. Because we know that success in life isn't just going to be about grades. I'm sure you have a similar experience. I know lots of people who have stellar grades, but who've, when they've hit problems, not been able to cope with that, you know. And part of what we are doing in a world which is increasingly diverse, increasingly changing rapidly, which is increasingly unpredictable, the ability to navigate change and uncertainty with confidence is also a really, really important attribute of successful people. And so schools have got to do something about that. And again, as you said, that the world and AI and technology really is now turbo boosting that change. You know, I know, as you mentioned earlier, I've been in education for 30 years, and technology has always just been, it's always just about to change the world, right? And it never quite has. But I think in the last 9 months, everyone's woken up to the power of generative AI and what AI is going to do. And I think there's now a real sense that change, that fourth industrial revolution that we were anticipating, is kind of here. And we've got to jump into that and make the most of it and help our pupils and our school leavers thrive in a world which is going to be very, very different to the one that you or I left school into. We're not preparing kids for the world of today. We're preparing kids for the world of the future. And that's both uncertain, but also really exciting.
I really like that sort of toolbox of tools that you're providing your students with is really enlightening to hear. And I remember when I was at school 30 years ago, I never really thought about a career or a life abroad. And I'm sort of very lucky to be 8 years into Singapore here. So looking at that and how the world has got a lot smaller over that time, how do you ensure that your pupils are global citizens of the future?
Yeah, and again, it's a great question. I was speaking to some parents yesterday, actually, here at school, and I think what I said to them is what I'd say to you, and I'll expand on this a bit more as well. I'm really keen that when our pupils leave a school like Caterham, they will have had a great time, they'll have amazing grades, they'll go on to some great destinations. And in terms of their careers, what I want for all of them is to be able to walk into a room anywhere in the world and connect with people, right? To be able to just make the most of the context in which they find themselves. And so at schools, we've got to make sure that we are preparing them for that. Now, here at Caterham, we do that in a couple of ways. I suppose just referring back to the previous conversation we had around future skills, we have a curriculum here that we've devised in conjunction with some of the big city firms called EDGE. And EDGE it's on the curriculum, right? It's a curriculum which is teaching pupils project management, divergent thinking, critical thinking, oracy, collaboration, project-based learning, all that kind of stuff we have on the curriculum for all of our pupils, because that toolkit, as you referenced, that idea of a toolkit of skills that you can apply in any context, that matters and it enables them to thrive in any situation, anywhere in the world, in any culture. So that's one thing we're doing. We have our own bespoke curriculums preparing people to work anywhere in the world. But the other really important part of what lots of schools now are doing, and I think, again, you referenced it at the very start, is around diversity, you know, creating schools which are diverse, creating schools in which, you know, the global connections that you make at school resonate into your professional life. So here at Caterham, we are both a day and a boarding school. So we have pupils here from all over the world. We have become intentionally diverse as a school in terms of ethnicity, in terms of neurodiversity, in terms of socioeconomic background, because actually that ability to work with people who are different to you, who have different perspectives, who've been on different journeys, I'm feeling comfortable with that and recognizing that everyone has talent, everyone has something to offer, no matter what their background, no matter what their culture, no matter what their starting point. Those are really, really important lessons for our pupils to learn. We make that a sort of meaningful experience too. We have a global network here at Caterham because we have boarding. You know, we have families from all over the world who will come here and talk to our pupils about work experience. I was out in Hong Kong a couple of weeks ago with alumni and parents and pupils talking about, you know, the future of work. So we are not just talking about the global world, not just talking about global networks. We actually have our own, which we bring in a very meaningful sense into school. So our pupils understand the power of a global network and what it is to live in an interconnected world. So it's really exciting. It's really exciting.
Amazing. And when you create a more global school in terms of its outlook and what you're trying to do for your pupils and creating those global citizens, what is the culture like now in British boarding schools? And how have you seen that change during your career?
Again, it's changed massively. I think boarding is such a fantastic opportunity for a young person, you know, and here at Caterham, we have boarders here from the UK, but also from overseas. And as you rightly said, I've worked in boarding schools for 30 years, and I can see just how far it's come over the last 30 years. It is now very much around building diverse global communities in our schools. It is about leveraging the opportunity that provides for all the pupils to make those global networks. It is around them learning the benefits and opportunities of living in diverse communities. It is about partnership with parents, absolutely. I think that's work alone. You know, we always see ourselves as the experts in education, but parents are the experts in their children, right? And it's working together to make sure that their child, you know, gets the most out of the boarding experience, that's at the heart of the boarding experience these days. And it's also about making sure that the pastoral care, the care that those pupils receive is tailored to the child. I mean, boarding is much, much more child-focused and child-centered perhaps now than it was, sadly, 30 years ago. So boarding feels much less, in all boarding schools in the UK, much less institutionalized than it was, and much more around the individual needs of individual pupils in a vibrant, dynamic, global, supportive, caring environment. It is a fantastic experience for young people.
Hopefully, this isn't a silly question, Kerry, but when I was at school, we were sort of pushed to think about going on to do a university degree to further our learning, to then go into the world of work. Is that still the same now, or is sort of that post-education world changing? Is it just about university, or is it about going into the workplace? Is it about apprenticeships? What are your kids really hungry for that you've sort of prepped them for going forwards?
Yeah, I think there are two ways of answering that question. So what we are in the business of doing in schools is encouraging pupils to be ambitious, to follow their own passions and their own dreams, and to end up in destinations that are right for them. And also trying to persuade parents that's what should happen too. So right now, here at Caterham and in most UK schools, like Caterham, most people still are going to university, but actually the opportunity post 18 are now really, they're broadening quite quickly. So we'll have lots of kids who go off to do degree apprenticeships, which we are very supportive of. You know, I think it's a fantastic option for young people. You know, going to work for Deloitte or PwC or whoever, you know, working, getting a degree alongside that. We have increasingly pupils who are going straight into the world of work. I mean, it won't surprise you. You know, we are, as a school, really good, kind of leading the way in the UK in terms of digital innovation. Lots of our kids are already running businesses off their laptops, and we know that in the sixth form, right? And we have a really good kind of a program of incubation here for their ideas. We work with our alumni who can support that work, so that we have some kids who are going straight into the world of work setting up their own businesses, actually, at the age of 18. You know, they've been doing it for 2 years here at school, and they're setting up those businesses in the real world at the age of 18. And I think, David, that's going to change over the next 5-10 years. The ways in which you engage with, whether it's higher education or other things, will become much, much more diverse. That's higher education here in the UK and globally. There'll be a much more diverse set of opportunities for young people to engage with, you know, what comes after the age of 18. But we absolutely, at the Caterham, I think most schools here in the UK no longer think that university is the only option, or indeed the best option for kids. And more than that, actually, that university here in the UK isn't the only option or the best option. You know, more and more kids from schools like Caterham are looking at the US. We had 5 kids go to US universities last year, a couple go to Australian universities, because we are preparing kids for a global world. And, you know, why not spread their ambition globally, rather than just saying, let's go to the same old universities that you know, your parents went to. So I think that world is changing quickly, and schools are recognising that and are putting in place a whole range of things to support pupils to follow their own pathways. So like us, lots of schools have a bespoke US universities programme or an overseas universities programme. We have a programme here at the school for kids who are looking at degree apprenticeships. We also have what we call a shadow board. So we have our board of governors, but we also have a shadow board made up of 10 former alumni who I think we're probably the first school in the UK to do it, actually. There are a couple of others doing it as well now. And what's great about this shadow board is they're all living, they've been on that journey. They're kind of 18 to 30 year olds. They've been through school. They've been into the world of higher education. They've been into the world of work. Getting their feedback and their input about what pathways our kids should be looking at has been really helpful in shaping the way we think about the post-18 world for our pupils. It's a really exciting time to be in education. Lots is changing, but there's also lots of opportunity.
It sounds really exciting to be going through your younger years of education. I certainly love to turn the clock back, but sort of have it in 2023 rather than when I was going through it. And is that what makes sort of teaching in the UK versus perhaps other countries when you're talking to your counterparts in schools across the world, is that really what sets the UK apart?
I think so. I think that we are, particularly in the independent sector here in the UK, you know, I think we are really good at innovating and changing and adapting to the needs of what is going on in the world. That we are, as a sector, although we have that great tradition, and a lot of you know, there have been schools who have been around for hundreds and hundreds of years, the reason the sector has been so successful over such a long period of time is that it's always consistently adapted to what's coming, not what is, and always adapted to what's over the horizon. And I think we're in that moment right now, that UK schools are really, really good at saying, okay, what do we keep that we know works really well, but how do we adapt what we're doing to the changing needs of our pupils and the world into which they're going? And I think we're living through that right now. You know, the education globally, but also here in the UK, is going through a period of real change, and we'll continue to do so. There's lots going on. One approach is to hunker down and hold on to what you know, but that's not what the UK does. The UK kind of UK schools go, okay, well, that's really interesting. How do we adapt to this? How do we make sure that our kids are better prepared and best prepared for this world that's coming? So I think that's why the UK education system is so well respected, that we deliver excellence, we deliver fantastic broad experiences, but we are also constantly evolving and changing to the needs of the workplace and the world into which kids are going.
Amazing. And one of the things that we've certainly picked up, certainly within my role of the last 4 years here at the British Chamber, is well-being of people in the workplace. And certainly this is sort of, I think we've noticed it being very much accelerated through the last couple of years, which have been challenging for lots and lots of people. Within the school system, how do you look after the well-being of your students, but also sort of see what's coming on the horizon, and how do you balance lots of different views in one place to support the well-being of those that you're educating?
That's an excellent question. And I think you're completely right. It kind of goes back to the conversation we had earlier on, actually, around what makes for success, right? And whether grades are the only thing that matters. Actually, emotional self-regulation, emotional well-being is utterly key to success. You know, it's not, I think, thankfully, most schools now in the world, and particularly here in the UK, you know, we now no longer talk about academic or pastoral. you know, actually success, achievement, whether that be in the classroom or otherwise, is underpinned by young people who feel emotionally secure, strong, connected, resilient, all those things. So well-being is absolutely foundational, I think, to success. So I think most of us now understand that. So in schools, to your question, schools are working really hard at this, and well-being has become a real thing in British education. I can talk about Caterham, where we have got a fantastic well-being program. It is embedded across the whole school. We have a curriculum, so our pupils have lessons every week on well-being. So it's both a kind of cultural and a systemic response to your question. All schools have to have great pastoral care. All schools have to have, and rightly so, the right people, the right policies in place for pupils to talk to. The most important thing about well-being, though, to your question, is school culture, right? Do you have schools in which young people feel emotionally confident, who are emotionally intelligent, who are emotionally articulate, who've been taught to understand their emotions and feel comfortable talking about their emotions and sharing how they feel, and being taught emotional self-regulation to be able to deal with their own emotions and manage their own emotions effectively? That's what our wellbeing curriculum does. And if we do that really, really well, it does a couple of things. One, it kind of helps prevent sort of mental health issues becoming crises. And the evidence is clear on that. If you do this job well between the ages of 11 and 14, then actually you kind of protect kids from crisis later in their life. But also it sets kids up to be successful young adults, because in those moments of great stress, whether it's an exam, a job interview, you know, the world of work, if you're able to regulate your emotions and understand your emotions and be empathetic and all those really important things, then that's going to set you up for success. So I think schools here in the UK are leading the way globally on this. And in terms of picking up on the trends and what's coming, lots of consultation with our pupils. You know, our pupils are very much involved in shaping how we respond to their needs. Lots of research being taken amongst schools and by you know, school organisations. So I think we are, as a sector here in the UK, doing a really good job at giving our pupils the tools they need to look after themselves. But also, in terms of our provision, we have fantastic provision across all UK schools at making sure that when things might go wrong, we pick them up really quickly and set up kids for success. It's really different. I mean, you talked about when you were at school, when I was at school, it's a different world. It's a different world. You know, emotional well-being is at the core of success.
Is there, sort of sat here within the British Chamber, is there more that businesses can do to connect with schools? Is there something that sort of helps to sort of bridge that gap and provide a space of safe self-well-being for your students that are coming through into the workplace? Is there more that businesses can sort of listen to in terms of the school systems in the UK?
You know, I think that's a really interesting question, David. I suspect there is. In the same way that in the last few years, universities here in the UK have begun to do the same thing, right? I think for a long time, schools were doing the wellbeing stuff, you know, and universities and businesses weren't, and kids were kind of arriving at university or arriving in the world of work and find that quite tough. So although they'd been kind of prepared by schools, the kind of cultures and systems into which they were stepping weren't quite ready for them. I think that process of helping pupils transition from 18 into university and then from university into the world of work, around induction, around creating space in the workspace to have time to reflect, to create work cultures where actually emotional regulation, emotional conversation are encouraged, I think it's really important, actually. I've seen it in the workplace here in the UK. We have lots of parents at the school who we talk to a lot with their experience of the corporate world. I think the corporate world is changing really quickly too. And this recognition that emotional integrity, emotional resilience, emotional self-regulation is a key foundation for success in any part of your life is now, thankfully, also part of what businesses are picking up on too. And I, you know, I've got two daughters. My eldest is 23, and she's now trying to be a lawyer. And again, really interesting seeing her experience of entering the corporate world and how actually the company she's working for has done a great job at helping her settle and transition into the world of work. So I think businesses are, here in the UK at least, really aware of that. I mean, one of our parents here at Caterham, also based in Hong Kong, works for one of the big consultancy companies and is, you know, kind of chairman of the Pacific Asia Group. And talking to him about what they're doing in this space too, you begin to sense everyone's cottoned on to this idea that success and achievement isn't just about driving people forward. It's also about helping them ground themselves and understand themselves and give them the space to be themselves. And if they can be their true self at work or their true self at school, you're going to get more out of them. So I think we're all of us beginning to see that.
Super, thank you. And there's some really good takeaways for us as the way we're thinking about it, engaging with businesses as well. We're really looking forward to seeing you when you're over here in a couple of weeks' time. Obviously, we were recording this sort of slightly earlier, but there's one question that we always ask all of our guests. It's a bit of a surprise one, but it's You've got an amazing career. You're doing so much for the future generation. I think your passion absolutely comes through. Your embracing of technology and well-being is just incredible. Your global outlook in terms of creating global citizens is superb. If I could throw you the British Chambers of Commerce time machine and you could go back to any point in your life, in your career, where you could give something that you know now that you give yourself some advice in the past, when would you go back to your younger self and what advice would you give yourself?
Oh, wow. Okay. I think, I'd probably go back to my kind of late teenage, early career years. So kind of, I suppose, 18 to 23, that kind of space there. And I suppose the advice I'd give to myself there is that there's no hurry, there's no rush. Actually, it's about putting the foundations in place and you do the right thing for the right reasons and you do it really well, success will come. Don't just chase success, chase excellence and purpose in what you do. And you do that consistently, great things will happen.
That's a brilliant answer. And it's very similar advice I try to give myself as well, rather than rushing through life. It's sort of enjoy the journey rather than the destination, because the destination really doesn't arrive, does it? So it's that's brilliant. Kerry, thank you so, so much for joining us. Like I said, we're really looking forward to having you out here in Singapore. And if there's anything more we can do, please do reach out.
David, thanks so much. Great to talk to you.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of the British Chamber of Commerce Singapore's podcast channel. Before you go, don't forget to subscribe and why not leave us a rating and review on Spotify, Apple, Google and the other podcast platforms. For more information about the Chamber, please visit our website at www.britcham.org.sg and tune in next time for a brand new episode.